Welcome to the Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast, your online compass for navigating the wide world of modern dating. Whether you're swiping left, swiping right, or meeting someone in the real world, I'm here to help you make the best choices on your journey to finding love. In this season, I'm diving deep into the world of dating apps, breaking down what makes a killer profile, and how to spot the red flags in others. We'll also explore how to connect with someone special in real life and the art of striking up a conversation that actually leads somewhere. We will also tackle the tough stuff, like healing from past relationships and learning how to build healthier, stronger connections moving forward. So whether you're new to the dating scene or just looking for fresh insights, join me as we explore the highs and lows of modern romance. It's time to swipe smart, date better, and find the love that truly fits. Welcome to the Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast, and I can't tell you how excited I am today. You know, this whole season has been about dating and dating profiles and yada yada, and I finally got a guest that I think really hits the nail on the head and that I think will help this podcast get to the point. I'd like to welcome to the show Charity Sinclair, and Charity is an author who wrote a book that's entitled "We're All Dating the Same Guy." Welcome, Charity, to the show.
Thank you so much, Andrew. I'm so happy to be here. I wrote this self-help memoir, and it's meant to be fun, engaging, help women that were in the same situation as me. So that could be someone getting out there, getting out of a toxic relationship, or just someone looking for love, are we all on the dating apps? And so the reason I wrote this book is because when I broke up with my ex, who had narcissistic tendencies, we can get more into that. I was so hungry to learn more about this personality disorder and how a person could treat someone else like I was treated. I was boggled. So I read a ton of books and learned a ton about this. And I just found a lot of content to be so heavy. And I wanted something to be a little bit lighter and had humor and write about my experience and write about the trauma afterwards. And how do you date and find love when you've kind of been cheated on or, you know, been through this experience? And so it was a really fun thing to write, and I hope to help other women.
Well, I feel your journey, because that's exactly what I did after my last relationship. I was basically a broken man. And I went into this depression for 3 months, and I had to pull myself out of it. And I've always been a podcast aficionado. Like, I like to listen to them. And I was a DJ back in college. And one morning I just woke up and said, hey, why don't you start a podcast? So people can be self-therapeutic in their own way. So I'm working through my issues and my dating past through a podcast. You do it through words in a book. You know, other people do it in blogs or whatever. So why don't you tell us a little bit of the backstory?
Yeah, sure. So I called up my wedding. I just got back from my bachelorette party, and it was a couple of weeks before my wedding. We had been together for 7 years, and in my office, got a text message and asked who it was. And they said, oh, this is his ex-girlfriend. And I said, oh, okay. You know, when did you guys date? And she said, we just broke up this past January. We've been dating for the past 4 years. And I'm like, at this point, my head's starting to whir. I'm squinting at the screen, trying to comprehend what's going on. She said, like, wait, we've been dating for 7 years, like, of the four that she's talking about. And so I basically came to figure out that he was living a double life. He had not only that girlfriend, but another one. Under the guise of he was working all the time, right? And I you know, there's also part of me I'm not questioning or kind of standing my ground too. So anyways, I canceled my wedding canceled it for his half and still threw a party for my side and kind of redubbed it, rebranded as the Party New Beginnings.
But wait, you skipped over an important part that I think. Did you confront him?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I basically reached out at first. Of course, I was caught within this whole like gaslighting for a week or two when I had confronted him. And I was like, this girl's reaching out. What's going on? And he's like, no. She's just crazy. She wanted to date me and she's upset that I didn't want to date her. So that's why she's doing this. She's crazy. Don't believe her. And after reading some of these books, I realized that the whole she's just crazy, my ex is crazy, is actually a track that a lot of narcissists use. So, you know, that's something I learned. But anyway, so I didn't know what to believe. He had an answer for every single thing. I went through his phone. He had nothing in there. I went through his email. There was nothing there. And so I called up my sister. I was like, look, this is what's happening. And she was like, you got to talk to the girl. And I was like, oh, God. So I got the girl on the phone and she didn't sound crazy at all, you know? And so we swapped stories essentially, and she told me hers and I told her mine, and we were both kind of dumbfounded. And so, yeah, that's how it happened. And so I had her print out like pictures of them, emails that she had written, everything, so that I had evidence. So that if he was, because he was compulsively lying about everything, it was really hard to kind of see what was truth, what was not. And he was really smart at taking kind of like what I call a half truth. So he'd take some detail that was true and spin it. I had her send everything and basically met him at a Starbucks. I wanted to meet in public, and I called off the wedding. And at that point in time, too, I signed up for emergency therapy. I'd never done therapy in my life before. And she was so helpful because she was helping me realize what was happening and that he was trying to save his reputation. He still wanted to get married this whole time. So he was just trying to save his reputation at that point at the cost of my happiness, essentially. And so that's kind of how it went down. And then it was funny. I called up the wedding at the Starbucks and he was like, Kristen, it was just platonic. And I pulled out this like really juicy email, of course, or it's basically, it's like a sext. And, I was like, oh yeah, you called this platonic? And he like, he waves it away. It's evidence, right? That he's lying. So he just knew. And then, and then after that, actually, he started stalking me, which was kind of a crazy story, too.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So I called up the wedding. I moved home, but I was still flying down to, at the time I lived in, home was Boston for me. I was still living in Philadelphia. And so I flew home, I flew down for work in Philly. And, I had a condo there that I owned, and I was going back and forth every 2 weeks, whatever. And so the first time I saw him was essentially outside of my work, which I had never in the 7 years I dated him, like casually come across him. And then the second time I quote unquote ran into him in the airport in the evening and I was flying in, and like the airport was desolate. There was no one there. And he had on a backpack. He didn't have like a luggage bag. And, the next day, my bus, because I drove my car home, I didn't have my car there anymore. So my bus, it drove by his apartment. And I saw in the morning his car was there. But in the evening when the bus came back, the car was gone. And so I was like, whoa, this guy didn't fly out of town. There's something going on. And then I was like, there's only like two people that know I'm here. It's basically my coworkers and I was coordinating with prospective tenants to rent out my place because I wasn't living there anymore. And I had told them when I was flying in and that it wouldn't work. And so I realized he was creating different identities, pretending to want to rent out my place in order to get my whereabouts of when I was going to be in town and whether I wasn't going to be in town. It was scary. It was like this guy, I thought I had known for 7 years, just went like, I couldn't trust anything he was saying anymore. It was really scary. Yeah. And then at that point, I like didn't know, is this guy going to hurt me? So I took him to court. And the most fucked up thing about court was I could prove that he was stalking me. But in the law, basically, it didn't necessarily mean I had to prove that the stalking meant that he might hurt me. So it was really hard for me to get a restraining order. We did it, but it was a bit of a battle. So it's wild, wild, wild.
But Charity, you and I both know that restraining orders really, they're just a piece of paper.
They're a piece of paper, but I think he cared enough about his reputation.
So he stopped.
Yes, that it was okay. It was effective for him.
Mm-hmm. Because I've heard plenty of stories where there's a restraining order in and the wife is found dead a month later or the girlfriend mm-hmm. is beaten up. So, you know, they don't. But I guess those are more in criminal cases or criminally insane kind of guys. But I'm guessing. So, well, let's. You threw around a couple of words that I identified with because I went through the same thing. I had evidence. And I was gaslit. That's one of the words. I was told that I was a narcissist and that she thought that I was stalking her, which I basically was, but I hired a private investigator. But so I wasn't stalking her. I paid someone to stalk her because I had to find out if the evidence that I had come across was true. And sure enough, she was on OnlyFans and yada, yada, yada. Wow. So,
yeah.
But let's talk about the gaslighting and the narcissism. Those words are now buzzwords all over social media. Like every ex is going to say, my ex is a narcissist. Or my ex, like you said, my ex was crazy. Yeah. Like he said that she was crazy.
Yep. This is such a good question because I actually really toiled over the subtitle of my book is Laughs, Lessons in Love After Dating a Narcissist. And I toiled with, do I call it a narcissist or do I call it just a toxic relationship? Because I knew that within the media, people are calling everyone a narcissist. And you know what? In our own ways, we all are narcissistic, right? We all have we're all online with our profiles, like on social media and whatever else, right? So everyone can have selfish,
narcissistic spectrum, we're on there. But if this is the spectrum, and of course, nobody could see me, but all of us are down here. You're right. Like social media, we're always posting pictures or, you know, you're on the grocery aisle and somebody cuts in front of you, you know, whatever. That's not really narcissism, but it's on the spectrum. But you go, as you like Asperger's or autism, there's a spectrum. And the further you go down that line, the more that person fills in the check boxes.
Yeah.
So, I just think that the word itself is being thrown around, but I did a few episodes with people that were professionals at NPD, Narcissistic Personality Disorder, and there are very few real NPDs out there.
But, I write about that in my book because I did so much research on it afterwards, and these are considered like cluster B personality disorders, and I think it was like 6% of the population actually has narcissism. And when I was talking to my therapist, she was like, he's most likely a narcissistic sociopath, but like in order, you know, he has to take a test in order to. So sociopathy also has a spectrum too. And you can be both of those things. So.
And narcissism, NPD is one of the few in the DSM, one of the few mental illnesses that nobody is going to wake up one morning and say, oh, I think I'm a narcissist. I need help. They're not going to walk into a therapist office, unlike somebody who's depressive or has anxiety or who maybe like myself, an alcoholic who wants help and will walk into a professional's office and ask for help. But a narcissist is not going to do that.
Right.
No.
Right. Yeah.
A true narcissist. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know.
I was talking about, you know, I kind of toyed with, do I pick this subtitle that has narcissist in it or not, because I know it's overused. And I think it, because it's overused, it kind of, there's so much as someone who was a victim of this, it's kind of crazy because I think, victims of emotional abuse, they're kind of devalued in a way when we throw it around. And so, but the reason that I specifically chose that subtitle for the book was because I wanted to reach people that went through the same experience as me. And I know that I'd be, you know, that would be maybe the one thing that I might get flagged for, but it is what it is. But yes, I agree that 100% it's overused. But in this case, I given my story, I highly believe I was dealing
with a narcissist. But our exes, your ex, my ex, fall maybe in the middle, and they have, you know, so like, you're right. There's a narcissistic test that they can give somebody, and they, if they answer it honestly.
Yeah.
And so I would consider my ex a narcissist because everything was about her, her vein, her beauty, and blah, blah, blah. We'll put that aside for a second. We can come back to that. Okay. During the relationship, because this is something that I missed, and in hindsight, I now see, but I ignored. Did you see any red flags during those 7 years?
Yeah. I mean, I think the major thing was I was just so disconnected from my heart and my body. And I think those are such good clues if we listen to them. But I do data analytics by day, the trade that I'm very much in my head. And so I was just logicizing things away. So I think that was something I learned going forward is to really check in with my heart and make decisions based on that. And have honest conversations around it and don't shy away. And if you're not happy and your heart's telling you you're not happy, walk. But of course, it's a very polarizing where there are high highs and low lows, and he knows you're upset. So then he comes back and pacifies you, whatever else. So I think just the trajectory of the up and down was a red flag. But it's interesting because my therapist actually asked me, you know, what was the first time that you thought you wanted to break up with him? And I was like, yeah, it was probably like 6 months in. I kept a journal. So I look back at it. 6 months in, we had plans to go on a run. And he showed up late, lied about being at a happy hour, and he was drunk. Super late, like an hour or two late. And I was just so frustrated. And I just remember standing outside of my house being like, I should just fucking break up with you. And of course, we went inside. And he tells me that he wants to marry me and he sees a future with me, right?
Yep. So
he's future,
the
he's
love future bombing.
Faking. He's future faking at this point. And I fell for it, right? Because yep. That's what I wanted. And so, but I think if I was perhaps a bit more developed in what I wanted, whatever else, that would have been enough of a trigger to just walk and be like, you know what? This is enough. So that was the first red flag. It was 6 months in. It was not long. And then, of course, there are many more besides that. But I think that's probably, it's nice to kind of go with the earliest one.
You said earlier in the interview when you started that he used to say he worked late a lot. And I think that right there was a red flag. He wasn't working. He was with the other woman. Yeah.
Yeah. He was so charismatic. He was a businessman. So he brought in sales for a bank, and he was very charming, very loved to be the center of attention at parties. And I loved that. I loved going to parties. I was also a party girl. And so I enjoyed that about him until I got a couple of years in a relationship and it was all about him. And I was like, man, it would be nice if he was a bit more emotionally responsive to me in some of these social settings. And so, yes, definitely.
Okay. In your profile, your bio that I researched and went through, you have some dating stories that you...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm guessing these are not with this man?
No. So I write about dating afterwards and just, you know, how light it can be and what I'm learning. And yeah, I think I'll go through my best and my worst. How
okay.
About that?
Let's do that. Yep.
So worst was actually a really great story. So this guy picked me up on a bicycle, and he had a Razor scooter slung over his shoulder, and he was going to take me to dinner. And I, with my heels, like jumped on this Razor scooter, and kind of he was like pedaling beside me, and we went to dinner. And I thought, you know, at first, like, okay, this is different, but it's fun, going for it, whatever. So we go about like 5 blocks or so, we hit a red light. He stops, he ties his shoe, and there's a package that falls out of his chest pocket. And they go, hey, you dropped something. What is it? And he looks at me. He's like, eyes turn into huge golf balls. And he's like, it's my stool sample. And I go, what? It's your stool sample? why do you have a stool sample on the date? What's going on? And he was like, well, I'm really into my health. And I was gonna, every 6 months, I sent it to a lab in California, and I was gonna mail it on the way to pick you up, but I didn't find a mailbox. So here we are. And I go, okay, trying to play it cool and casual. I'm like, you know what? Let's mail this thing. Let's find you a mailbox. So we go across the street, find a mailbox, and he's trying to put it in the slot. And he's kind of struggling. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh, it won't fit. I'm like, what do you mean it won't fit? Isn't it squishy? Can't you just put it in?
Yeah.
And he goes, no.
Oh, the visual I'm getting right now. Oh, God.
Like, yeah, and I'm on a Razor scooter, mind you.
Yeah, right.
He's like, no, it's in a test tube. And the test tube will break. I can't. And so I went to dinner with this guy who had a stool sample in his chest pocket. And then on the way home, same thing happened. It dropped out of his pocket. But this time, it was like we were going through a huge traffic rotary, a traffic circle. And I was like yelling up ahead, like, hey, you dropped your package. And yeah, so that was the most entertaining and just like complete absurdity.
And needless to say, you never went on a second date with him.
No, but not for that reason. I was open to the health thing. And, you know, that gets to, you were talking about being picky. I mean, he was definitely different and I appreciated the difference, but it was not for that reason. Yeah, I think I just didn't vibe with him.
But charity still. When I get ready for a date, I'm like a woman. I will spend an hour in the bathroom with I take the shower, I do whatever. I'm vain when it comes to that. You wouldn't find a stool sample in my top pocket. That if that had to be mailed, I'd leave it on the counter and say I'll do it in the morning. I don't know why you, but okay, all right. Next story.
Yeah, it's just weird. He's big into multitasking. I mean, I also found out on that date that he used to be in an open relationship with like multiple of his female roommates. So it was so different than what I was used to, right? Because I was in this long-term relationship. And so I came back on the dating market and was like, whoa, there's like open relationships, like stuff has to be defined. There's polyamory. Like, this is different than when I was like, you know, I never online dated. So it was just a wild ride. So that was the worst and best. And then my best was actually, I love to travel. And so I went with me and my friends. We went on a sailing trip in Croatia. It was like a bucket list item for me. And what you're supposed to do, it's this thing called Yacht Week, where a bunch of boats are coordinated together and they basically go from island to island, like partying every day. But this trip was sold out. So we ended up getting just like our own boat and doing our own thing. But I was kind of bummed out because I wanted to be on this like huge flotilla that was partying everywhere. And so I was like, all right, well, maybe this is just going to be more of a chill vacation because we're, you know, you're a boat in the middle of a cove. There are other boats docked around, but, you know, maybe they're like European families and things like that. So just chilling on a boat, and sure enough, there's this boat that pulls into the cove that we're anchored in, and it's like full of men in their 30s that I thought were German at first, but they were Austrian, and they were celebrating a birthday party, and I ended up hitting it off with one of the guys, and we had a great night, and we were like gonna try to meet up again, but literally two ships passing in the night were like the coordination of, you know, marinas and stuff like that didn't work out. So he was like, well, he wanted to get my phone number. The next morning after we're hanging out. But our sailboat is like pulling out of the cove to the next thing. So he's like, runs out of the cabin, like hungover, runs to the front, almost falls off the boat to get my number. He's like, hey, wait, let me get your number. And so like yelling it over the sound of the motor of the boat in order to give it to him. He's like, okay, I'll text you. And so 2 weeks later, after this, I ended up doing a little bit of solo travel. And he came and visited me in Budapest. and we had a weekend together and we just connected. And it was like one of those moments where time stops. You know how they say you can be in flow when you're working, when you're in like a really creative thing? I felt it with this man. And it just felt like the world stopped and it was like our hearts were open. It was such an amazing, fun, fluid, comfortable, safe experience. And so we had that weekend. I continued my solo travels up to Prague and he had to go back to his real life or whatever. And so I'm kind of texting him along the way, telling him about what I'm doing with my solo travels and hanging out, watching all these jazz shows. And I was like, you should come up. I was joking, like, you should come up and visit me again. It's like a 7-hour train ride. And he's like, no, 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 I have to visit my brother. And I'm like, okay, okay. But Friday rolls around in that week and I get a text from him and he's like, hey, I just talked to my brother. He said I should go to Prague. The next train leaves in an hour. I could be there at, you know, midnight. What do you think? And I'm like, yeah, let's go for it. So he takes a 7-hour train up to visit me. We spent a whole nother like beautiful inflow weekend together. And it was just so special. But of course, after that, you know, I float. Everyone has their lives. And like, how do you make this international thing work? And I think the nice thing about being in your 30s is you start to figure out what you want in life. And what I wanted was, you know, to be within the U.S. or close to family. And of course, you did, too, in Austria. And so it just we had the chemistry. The chemistry was there, but the compatibility wasn't.
Yeah.
So, which is fine, right? So it was an experience that I think just opened my heart in a different way. I was so bummed, of course, afterwards, but it was what it was. And it was such a fun, beautiful trip.
I am not a long distance dater. And you know, I do travel myself, not as frequent maybe as you, and I haven't been to Croatia and Prague and all that. But if I was to meet somebody over there, you just... In my world, you can't fall in love with them because I'm guessing you live in the States, right? So, how is that going to work?
I've lived in Spain before, and I feel like I'm pretty open to international, whatever. And I was contemplating maybe I could live over here for half a year and the other half because I work remotely.
Okay.
So I was logicizing in my head all these ways that we can make it work, which we could have, right? If there was alignment, but there wasn't. I guess maybe in that way, I'm a bit more open to that kind of international experience. It's hard though, when you first move somewhere, to start over.
Yeah.
And that's part of what he said, you know, like, I don't want you to regret or resent me for giving up your life to move here, which I thought was, you know, so loving.
Okay. So that was your worst and or funniest and then best story. The first one, so I met the guy with the stool sample. You met on a dating app, right?
Yeah, yes, I did.
And then the second guy you met in the wild. Okay.
Yes.
Let's segue into dating apps. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? And I don't know if you're single today and if you're using dating apps, but I'd love to get your take on what's going on in today's modern dating society.
Yep. Yeah, I have a life partner now that I'm very happy with. I've dated for years. So, and I was out there, man. I was like multiple dates a week, to the point where you start to get burned out.
Exactly.
But in terms of, so again, I mentioned like I'm a data analyst. So I kind of went into the online dating scene with a different perspective, and it was around efficiency. So how can I be really efficient with my time and get the best results? And there's actually this concept in economics called the Pareto principle, which talks about, I don't know if you've ever heard of like 80-20 into something. So it's 80% of effects come from 20% of causes or inputs. So that's like, for instance, if you're a business, 80% of your income is coming from 20% of the clients.
Gotcha.
Or a woman is wearing 80%, 80% of the time she's wearing 20% of her wardrobe. So it just describes this like natural phenomena that happens. And I had the question of like, well, does this happen in online dating? And so I was analyzing which app to use. So personally, I think the front runners are Bumble, Hinge, and Tinder. I didn't even start on Tinder because of the connotation it has with being a hookup app.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I could not. Yeah, Bumble is my first go-to. Hinge is my second. And I haven't been on Tinder in 20 years because of the connotation. And because of my age, I don't know. I'm a little older than you, I think. I hope. And I don't think I'll meet my generation on Tinder. But I think Tinder has that hookup connotation, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not looking for that. And I think Tinder's trying to do something about that. They're branching out. But anyway, I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, no worries. And so I was questioning, okay, well, you know, I was logging all my dates in this Excel spreadsheet. I had like 200 dates. And so the question was, okay, is Bumble or Hinge more effective? And I realized that I was spending like 70% of my time on Bumble for 30% of the dates or something. So that meant, with the reverse, I should, you know, I was spending 30% of my time on Hinge and getting majority of these first second dates. And that's because the woman has to make the first move on Bumble, right? So for you as a man, you should stay on Bumble because the friction there is easier. Whereas a woman, it was just, I was making more conversation and it was more dead ends. It was more work for me. So I decided to drop Bumble and just stick with Hinge as one of the things that I did.
Okay. Let's go back to Bumble a second, because I am currently on Bumble and I've been on Bumble on and off for the past year and a half. My subscription ends, I wait a couple of months and then I go back on. And that is one of my complaints about Bumble. So I get the idea that the woman has to make the first move because, again, she might have 20 or 30 matches in her inbox and she's got to weed through them. But I match. So I get a like. Bumble will say, hey, you're halfway to a like. So I look, and if she meets my checkboxes, like distance and the type of body I like or type of person or ethnicity, I have a couple of different, like, whatever. I match, and then you get 24 hours. She gets 24 hours, and I can extend that to 48 hours, but 9 times out of 10, I don't get anything.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the times they're creating, the UX is like the design of the app. They're creating it to basically so you have to pay more money, right? So I assume at the 24-hour mark, are you paying more money to extend the time frame?
Well, I paid for my Bumble at the beginning, I paid for the full premium. So, which you get 2 spotlights a week, you get 10 super swipes, and you can, I guess you can extend the chat. You can see who likes you, yada yada. My Bumble actually expires at midnight tonight, so I haven't decided whether to renew it or not. I think I might jump over to Hinge and play with that for a while. I jump around on the dating apps because I report back to the audience what I'm finding, what I'm seeing, and I need a wide variety of them because I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with the dating scene.
Yeah. And Match might be one you want to check out too. I had a dating coach at some point and he really pushed that because you have to fill out like all of this profile. So it's people who like actually care instead of like you said, like folks that were, you know, going, you know, halfway with it. So right. That might be another one to consider.
I've been on Match. I didn't have a lot of success with that. I'm open to going back to it. Here's the problem with the dating apps that they've been around. So 2008, give or take, Match and eHarmony came on the scene on the website desktop. You'd have to log in on a website. And then when the cell phones came along in like 2012, 2014, they moved the apps. And since then, so let's take all of them. You got eHarmony, you got Bumble, you got Tinder, you got Hinge, you got pick 10 more. None of them have changed a thing. You know, and so there, and now there's a whole bunch of new apps out there. And I've interviewed some of the CEOs. There's one that's a video dating app, which if you like the person, you cannot text them. Your first contact with them has to be video, which I like. I think that's kind of cool. But
there's not enough people in my area yet. It's kind of brand new. There was a couple of AI dating apps that opened up that one's called Valor. And you talk to a bot and you tell the bot all about yourself. And then it creates a profile for you. You upload your pictures. And then that bot goes out and finds, let's say you're on there. It finds your bot. They think we're a match, and the two bots chat with each other. Now, this is AI. And then within a day or two, they send you and I the chat that the bots had. And then we pick it up from there. If we like
it. Wild, huh?
Yeah, wild. But those are far and few in between. So I think Hinge and Bumble and Match and eHarmony. eHarmony, you don't have to upload a picture. Now, I don't know about you, but I want to see who I'm looking at. I think it's only fair. If you see me and I don't see you.
Yeah, physical attraction is part of the relationship.
Thank
Otherwise,
you.
It's just a friendship, right?
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't want to be like, I guess, vain or insensitive, but if she's not putting up a picture because she's overweight or she, I don't know. Any number of reasons she doesn't.
Yeah, or if she's not confident, right, in herself and whatever, no matter how she looks, right.
But what would a dating coach tell her to do?
Yeah, hire a photographer, get some great shots of yourself looking sexy and whatever size you are, and throw them up there and get on there consistently. Get on there every day. Talk. You spend just 20 minutes every day, and you'll find someone.
All right, I agree. Let me ask you a question. So if I go back on eHarmony, which I'm toying with, and if they still have that same thing that you don't have to upload a picture, because I actually wrote them one day and I said, what's up with this? And they say, well, we want to value the privacy of our people, yada, yada. Cool. Let's say that I match with somebody or they like me and I go look at their profile and their picture's not there. How do you ask them to, like, hey, for me to continue talking to you or texting with you, I need a picture of you, but you see where I'm going? I don't want to be.
Yeah. Or does that stall it? Or do you introduce it more organically and say, hey, I've loved our conversation so far. Would you be up for a video chat tomorrow like literally name the time to be really concrete and try to land something. And then if she pushes back from there, right, then it can be kind of a negotiation of like, at least we're escalating as opposed to it being this like desert land where you're just stuck on an app.
I like the finesse that you put, the way you put that, but I think this is what's making the dating apps, people cringe about the dating apps. Why do I have to go through that effort? So if you uploaded a picture, that I don't have to spend 10 days trying to convince you to go video chat with me, you know? So
that could be your screening process too, of like, why even, like, you could just say, I don't want to be with that type of person that doesn't have their picture up
correct.
There.
Yeah. Ultimately, yeah. I swipe left. I could be swiping left on somebody, a great person.
It only hurts them. Definitely.
Okay. Very good.
But another thing to think about, especially I think the difference between men and women on dating apps is how they swipe. So women swipe right. They swipe on like a guy, a person they like 5% of the time. And men swipe right on 53% of the women that they see. So
visually,
if you're going through, you're swiping on Bumble, whatever. Yeah. You know, you're passing on, 47% of the people and swiping right on 53% of them. And so that means the bottom 80% of men are competing for the bottom 22% of women. In the top 80% or so women are competing for the top 20% of men. So it's really, so from my perspective as a woman, it's super skewed based on the swiping behavior. And it makes it so hard for guys in particular. As a woman, I realized, okay, I'm not going up after the top 20 because that's where all the other women are.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on other indicators that I think are great examples of someone who would make a good partner. And they're like halfway good looking and relatively, you know, they don't have to be a freaking model as long as they're okay, attractive, 6 out of 10, great, I'll take it. It can escalate from there given their personality. And that was a much more effective strategy for me.
Okay.
As a guy, yeah.
Okay, question. And I can only ask you, but maybe you have worked or talked to many other women. So you're on a dating app and you're swiping, or you're scrolling through,
yeah,
whatever they're presenting you. When you see a guy, do you read their bio or do you swipe? Like, if a guy's not attractive to you right off the bat, do you just swipe left, don't even bother with the bio? Or do you check out his bio just to see? Because I've heard that men are visual, but women are cerebral, right? So,
yeah. And that's actually proven if you look at how different genders rate, like, what they want. Men bias more towards, like, the physicality, whereas women bias more towards, are they, like, financially responsible? Which is interesting. So, for me, they just have to be halfway decent, and then I'll look at their profile. It's not a like okay, if it's a selfie where like half their head is cut off, like, yeah, you're immediate swipe left, right?
Don't get me started on the photos.
Yeah. But if it's like, okay, this, you know, this is an endearing photo, let's keep going. I'm open. So I think that's the whole keep the aperture open, because you don't know what the personality is like, and that can grow over time. And I think that's the mistake we make, is doing it solely based on physicality.
Yeah, I agree. And I did a whole thing the last couple of weeks about photos, and I don't see too many men's profiles, and only because I don't have access to them. But I have a couple of female friends that I'm going to get together. I want to see what the men are doing. But from what I'm seeing with the women, and we talked a little bit this before we recorded, I'm seeing women, their very first photo should be their best photo.
Mm-hmm.
No matter, the hair should be done, makeup or not, it's up to you. But I should be able to see your face, a good portion of your body, and it should be a very good, clear picture of you. I'm coming across the first photo where there's three women at a bar, and I have to figure out which one is you. And then go to the second one. And it's you, and I went through these one night. I saved them. And there was another one where a woman was shoulder to shoulder with a guy her own age. And I'm like, is this your brother? Is this your ex-boyfriend? Is this your best friend? But why is there a guy in your photo? This should not, you know, so women are not being smart in uploading their photo. I just had to get that out.
Well, that's okay. It's also for men too, but the bright side is it makes it easier for you to compete. If you know that that's how, you know, people are setting up their profile. And something I used that was really helpful was this app, and I'm sure there are plenty out there. It's called Photo Feeler. I don't know if you've heard of it,
No. But
you upload your photo and people will essentially like rate how good it is. And so you can pay like $20 and people will do it. And they give scores for like how smart you appear and then how kind.
Oh, really?
Other ones? Yeah.
What is it called?
It's called Photo Feeler. And so I did a little experiment where I uploaded like a lot of my photos that I had used in past profiles and to see which ones hit and which ones didn't. And of course, like the one of me with the least amount of clothes was the best.
Yeah, of course.
Of like the most clothes with the hat on, which I thought was like a cute, like ski bunny type of photo, did not hit at all. So it was interesting. What I thought was cute was very different than what the guys thought was cute. But it's helpful to know like, oh, you know, your own biases, but also redirect to like, man, I'm hitting like 3 out of 10 on all these. Maybe I need to hire a professional photographer for $100, save myself some time and like do it the right way. You know what I mean?
And that's okay if you have the money to do that. But here comes my speech. I'll make it brief. Today's cell phones, whether you have an iPhone or an Android, they have such great technology that they're high pixelated. There's filters. What really irks me are the ladies, and I know men do this too. They still walk into the bathroom and they take selfies with the mirror. They hold the phone up. And that it's an immediate left. It's because you're being lazy.
Yeah.
My I have the iPhone, and I have, and that's me. And I understand not everybody can do it, but I have the watch. You could take the phone, you set it up, you can go sit up the couch, and then you go, you hit your watch, and it says 3, 2, 1, like we counted down here. It'll take a picture of you sitting, and then, or I play tennis, so I took a video of me playing tennis, and then you can grab a screenshot out of that video of you running around the court and find the best one. It takes a little effort, but you're marketing yourself. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't put together a sloppy resume, right? So why put together a sloppy, half-assed profile?
I don't know. Why bring stool on a date? I mean, people are wild out there.
Yes. Okay. I've been doing a lot of the talking. Talk about your book a little bit and why our audience should run to the stores or run to Amazon and buy it.
Yeah, it's meant more than anything, it's meant to be fun, but I don't just want it to be like a memoir. I want it to help other people. And so it's raw. It's very vulnerable in some of the stuff that I'm talking about in there. And it's really engaging. All these stories that I have, I love to travel. So it's meeting different people in different areas and just all the things I learned. And we think that these people that have been put into our lives are victims and, you know, they're horrible. And actually, they're such growth opportunities and learning opportunities. And I learned so much about myself having gone through that experience with my ex, and now how I can learn to pick them and what shit I won't put up with anymore. And, you know, like you said, like, the majority of people are great people. Maybe they just don't have their act together, and that's okay. But being really intent about what you want, and there's hope out there for love. And if you really want it, you can have it. And so this is just for everyone out there who is really kind of devastated and burned out by the dating scene. And it's just looking for something light and fun, but can also learn along the way. So go out and buy it. It's dropping. It just dropped yesterday for Valentine's Day. So it's a great book to have for one of your single girlfriends, for you, if you're spending a hot night by yourself with a glass of wine by the fire. Go ahead, pick up this book and read it. It'll be the best time you spend with yourself. Self-love is great, too.
And we could find that on Amazon, I'm presuming.
You can find it on Amazon. And I also have a gift for you guys. If you go to wealldatingthesameguy.com/podcast. There's a gift as well if y'all are interested.
I think that I think the title is great, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that, but I think your story, you know, when I broke up with the girl 3 years ago and I found out that she was doing things that were very, very inappropriate in a relationship, my audience kind of knows what they were. I thought I was unique. I said I had to get this story out there. And then I found out that I'm not so unique. Like your story is rampant. These stories are not, we think that we're the only ones that went through them. And you find out we're not, you know, and that there are other people that have went through that. You just have to be more careful in choose wisely, vet better. Ladies, one thing I want to tell to the ladies, when you give out your phone number to a guy, let's say you're on Bumble and you're chatting for 5 days and you say, let's take it to the next level. I can't stress this enough. I do this because I'm also into the world of scam baiting, where I fight against scammers. And I've gotten scammed myself. They have attempted to scam me, romance scams and the other. I Googled the woman's phone number only to see, to make sure that it's not a scammer, because a fake phone number will come right up. It'll be flagged. What I found was that 50% or more of the phone numbers that the ladies were giving me showed me their address and gave me their work history. They gave me their birthplace. I had their last name. I found so much information about it. I think for if you have Gmail, you can get a free Google phone number, or for $20 or less, or give or take, go to the Apple Store You can download an app that'll give you a phone number. I use the second phone number. I don't give out my real phone number. And I just think the ladies need to be careful. You give out your phone number, there's a good chance that the guy can Google it and find out. And of course, I'm not a creep. So I didn't use this, any of this information, but I'm just sharing this information with you and with the audience. Be careful.
You do have to be careful.
You have to be careful.
And another thing I've seen too from women is actually being like way too scared as well. There's a part of this where you have to be open, you know, as women in general, right? We're like generally unsafe, right? Go walking down the street by ourselves. That's something we think about. Men, maybe not. And so, but if you're in this constant state where you're always scared, you're not opening yourself up to love either. So it is a balance. There are certain tools that you can use, like you said, Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where can we find you on social media?
On TikTok, I am Charity Sinclair, and on Instagram, we're all dating the same guy.
I laugh every time I hear that. It's a great title. Okay. I'll put all that in the show notes, and I will follow you. And Charity, I feel like we could talk for another hour, and maybe we'll have you back one day after your book drops. And I think there's a lot to talk about in the modern dating. We got to fix this. There's something wrong.
Yep, definitely. Well, it was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Andrew.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right.
Hi. Such an amazing woman. And you got to buy her a book. We're all dating the same guy. What an amazing conversation. And in the realm of some of the worst dating stories, the stool sample story just blew me away. Come on, guys. You can't make this shit up. You really can't. All right, Charity, thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing. And I really do hope that your book does well. The book is dropping, folks, on Valentine's Day or maybe the day before. And this episode drops the day before that. So this episode is dropping February 12th. And her book will be available the next day or the day after that. I'm sorry, Charity. I forget which it is. But we recorded this and we timed the release of the book so it would be within a day or two of each other. So here comes my spiel. If you're enjoying the podcast, please, I urge of you to give me some reviews on Apple or Spotify. If you'd like to be on the show, I'm looking for people to talk about their dating stories. And what else? Oh, yeah, in the show notes. Please, folks, I've been running this podcast for 2 years now, and you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to tell you how much it costs to run a podcast, but it is not cheap. And right now I'm holding off on the sponsors, but I could use a donation. So in the show notes, you will see buy me a cup of coffee, and you can donate $5, $10, $15 towards the show. And thank you, folks, for listening. You guys are the best. I'm coming up on 2 years on this podcast. Never, ever, ever would I have thunk I would have gotten this far. And I have to thank you, folks. So, Anonymous Andrew saying, until next week, ciao.